setting these.
Rule number 10.
Are you ready? Call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Thursday, March 20th, 2003, and we are scheduled to hear a grant application and a bill today. We'll begin by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2650A relating to school finance. And Sue McGlashan from LFO is our fiscal officer on this one. And what I've requested is that we, because this is our first venture into the work session arena, that we have Ms. McGlashan go over the rules that the committee adopted as they relate to voting. And this is just for the information and just refreshing the memories of the committee members.
Madam Chair and members, I would just you have a copy of the rules in your packet of information, and I would just ask you to turn to the second page and look at Rule 10, which talks about a quorum for reporting legislation from any subcommittee to the full committee, and that is a majority of the appointed House members and a majority of the appointed Senate members. So for purposes of your subcommittee, since you have three appointed House members and two appointed Senate members, for a quorum, you will need two representatives and two senators for a quorum. And then in order to report out any legislation, you will need the affirmative vote of a majority of the appointed members of each House who are present. And so if you have your three representatives and your two senators, you will need two representatives voting aye and two senators voting aye. If you have two representatives and two senators, which still would constitute a quorum, everybody would have to vote aye. So because of the size of your subcommittee, it's important that people be here.
Questions? Let's go ahead then and open up the public or resume the public hearing part of House Bill 2650. And Ms. McGlashan, can you give us LFO's overview on this bill, which is essentially a technical fix bill that from the 30,000-foot view is very simple, but when you get down into trying to explain it, it becomes very complex, and there's actually two separate pieces to it. So good luck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, excuse me, you have a packet of information on House Bill 2650A, and you will find behind the bill itself the fiscal impact statement from our office, from Legislative Fiscal Office, as well as a staff measure summary and a revenue impact statement. And this bill was referred, by the way, from the House Revenue Committee down to Ways and Means so that there could be a discussion of the potential fiscal impact of the bill. And then you also have a copy of some amendments, the -A2 amendments, and then behind those an explanation of why they're needed. And I'll get to those after I give you a brief overview of the bill as it came down to Ways and Means. And basically what this bill does is it makes a technical change to statutes that cover the accrual provisions for school districts and education service districts. And essentially it changes the accrual method that's currently in statute from a specified percentage of the funding received as a state school grant for a fiscal year to a per student amount. And then it also makes some changes in the provisions for cash basis school districts and ESDs in terms of their negative ending balance provision. And the reason why the bill is necessary is because you might recall that in the third special session, the Legislative Assembly passed Senate Bill 1022, which set up the accrual provisions. And the reason why that was passed is because the Legislative Assembly wanted school districts to be able to offset a $211 million reduction in the 2002-03 appropriation in the state school fund by using these accrual provisions. And again, under the current statutes, districts can accrue up to a specified percentage, 9.1% of the state school fund grant received for 02-03. And subsequent to passage of Senate Bill 1022, the amount to be received was reduced. It was expected to be a certain level for 02-03 as of the third special session, and then after that, the amount was reduced because of the failure of ballot measure 28 in January of this year, and then also the implementation of the December 2002 allotment rule by the former governor to rebalance part of the 0103 statewide general fund budget. So that reduced the collective accrual amount to $195 million, which was not the intent of the Legislative Assembly. So it's below the amount expected. So the bill, as it's come to you, is intended to fix that problem. And then there's another issue, and that is that the current statutes provide that, again, the accrual is based on the state school fund portion of the equalization grant, but not all districts have the same proportion of state and local funding in their equalization grant. So, for example, you might have a school district that has $4,000 in state funding in its equalization grant. Another might have $1,000 in its equalization grant. The first school district could accrue $364 per student, and the second would only accrue about $91 per student. So by making this change, it lets the districts accrue the same amount per student, which is what was intended by the Legislative Assembly. So those are the technical aspects of the bill and what it's designed to do as it's come to you. In terms of the fiscal impact, there is a potential fiscal impact, but it is indeterminate. And it's really on a statewide perspective. And on that perspective, you can calculate a fiscal effect of the bill, but it assumes that all districts basically will accrue or carry a negative cash balance. And if you look at the fiscal impact statement that I provided on the second page, if you flip it over, you'll see a calculation of what the potential fiscal impact could be. But again, it's on a statewide perspective. And not all districts plan to use the accrual provisions, I'm told. And of those that do, not all will necessarily accrue to the maximum amount allowed. So on a practical level, it's pretty difficult to determine the fiscal impact. And one other thing to keep in mind is this calculation that's shown in the fiscal impact is based on the governor's proposed budget of $5.05 billion for 03-05. And the effect of the accrual depends on the actual budget that's finally passed by the Legislative Assembly. So pretty much the fiscal impact of the bill is indeterminate. So if there are no questions on that...
Hold on a second. Are there questions? Everyone has
Madam Chair, I'm going to be honest about this. I spent 10 years on the school board, and we were on a cash basis, and I should understand that. And I never really had a full understanding of accrual basis, and nobody could ever explain that to me in a way that was understandable. And maybe I'm just, just too thick-headed to understand it, but we're not going to get through that this morning because we will be here all day trying to make me understand it. That wouldn't be any good. This is all about the shift. Mm-hmm. That's what this is all about, and the shift, as my understanding, from talking to my four school districts, is questionable for them to use. It affects their bond ratings, potentially. There are other issues that you're not talking about here that I'd like to have fleshed out a little bit and then kind of get to the bigger picture. My understanding is that the shift is not something all school districts can use. Some will and some won't. It affects especially districts that are large and are trying to float bonds for new construction. And there are people in the bond market look at this thing as something that is not a good accounting method. Having said that, I'm not going to go into a lot of depth because that's about as much as I know, okay? And I'd like to hear a little bit more about this, if I could, for the picture of what it really means and the bottom line to the districts, if we can get to that conversation.
Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to suggest that you ask Ozzie Rose from the Confederation of School Administrators to come up because he would have a more intimate level of knowledge on how it affects school districts specifically.
Mr. Rose, we would definitely appreciate your uncanny ability to speak to us in English about these matters.
You guys understand all this, not just me. can.
Thank you for the question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, first, for the record, I've run an association for 29 years. It's on an accrual basis. My auditor has conceded that I think Kay should know nothing about the audit, but I know where all our money is, and I keep us in the black. So I'm with Mr. Bates. Accrual is something for people who know something different than I know. Now, bottom line.
For the record.
For the record. What we did in the last session.
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Ozzie Rose with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators.
Thank you.
For the record, we didn't shift any money. We created an accrual mechanism to allow districts to cover the fact that we cut $211 million out of the 2001-03 budget to help balance that budget. And you'll recall, I think, that when that was first proposed, all of us threw up our hands and said no. But in the end, what we were faced with is, on a statewide basis, $211 million worth of school programs being used in, or funded in some way. And this mechanism, although offensive to purists in the accounting world, works. About half the districts are using it. And the reason we changed and said, let's do it, is we were in a position of, you're talking about $211 million for the program. Some districts are able to not use the accrual method because they had reserves enough to cover the cut that we're talking about, or they had other cuts they went ahead and made, and they are choosing not to use the accrual. Now, that may change in the future. This is not a one-time thing. The bill was enacted, and the accrual lays there for people to use into the future. The accounting people were very much up in arms, although the CPS Association did put out a letter finally saying it is legal. They've made it legal. And about half the school districts are using the accrual, and about half aren't. They're each choosing to do so. They're each choosing to do so based on their need to fund programs that they want to have for the rest of this year. And the fix is, we agreed to do all this last time, and unfortunately, in the rush of getting things done, as happens in special sessions, we made a little glitch, and you're fixing the glitch.
That's my understanding, too, that the glitch came in when we reduced the amount of money going into the school support fund in as a result of Measure 28 failing and as a result of the rebalance to the November revenue forecast. So the mechanism that we'd set up to calculate the shift didn't work anymore because the base number was different.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's half the glitch. The other half is we used the 9.5% of the
payment,
and the payment varies because some people raise more locally, mm-hmm. and so forth. And I think that's staff explained that. Mm-hmm. There's two little glitches that need to be fixed. I would just suggest to you that it was your idea. We agreed to do it. Everybody's functioning on it, and it would be somewhat unkind to not go ahead and fix the glitch so that. And we're 50 days or 40 days from graduation, and I think you need to do this. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. That was an excellent testimony. Representative Smith has a question.
Ozzie, so what is this going to do for the school districts who do not have reserves left, and what's that going to do for them?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the district who doesn't have reserves is allowed to fix their books at the end of this year through the accrual thing and borrow the money to go ahead and fund the rest of the program and have their books to be in balance because of this accrual mechanism. It's an accounting procedure that allows them. Now, another district who said, wait a minute, I don't want to accrue, but I can fund that, whatever my share, that, what is it on a per student basis? What's the amount we're talking about? I can't say it. The $211 is how many dollars per kid?
For 0203, it'd be about $309.
$309. Okay, so for one of your districts, $309 per ADMW is there, and if they they don't have, it's not there because we cut the payment that much. Now they have a choice. They can continue to run their science program, their football program, whatever it is that costs $309 through the rest of the year. and take it out of the reserves. Or if they don't have reserves, they go borrow some money and say, we'll pay it back in July or August, and they put an accrual on the books, and the books still appear to be balanced at the end of this fiscal year, June 30. We have to have balanced books by law.
So the school districts will have a choice. Let's say we're in a school district that has already cut out days off their school year so they can balance within this current biennium.
Yes.
And they anticipate before this happens that they may have to go to additional days. Do they then have a choice of whether, for instance, if they can go to the additional days of cutbacks in their school districts by borrowing, or because if they borrow, technically, that will come out of their next biennium's budget?
Madam Chair, if it's Smith, the answer to the last question is yes, but
okay.
You're speaking in the future tense. Districts have already done this. They're not going to make a new decision. This was available, and they've made their decision to not cut days or whatever based on this bill.
So it's not going to have any effect on the ground. We just need to make the technical change.
Yeah, it is not going to change anything that's going on after March 20th, 2003. They've already made these decisions based on the way the bill passed, not knowing there was a glitch in it.
Okay.
So you're not changing anything for decisions that are going to be made out there. If you don't fix it, you're going to create some decisions out there that are going to be difficult for some school districts.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm not carrying this bill. I don't understand it all.
Not a problem.
Madam Chair, would you like me to carry it from the gallery?
Are there further questions or comments for Ms. McGlashan or for Mr. Rose? Thank you very, very much. Now, we also have the Dash 2s.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, you have some amendments to this bill. We actually didn't intend for there to be any amendments to this bill when it came down, but we discovered that there's another technical fix needed related to school finance, and so this is a vehicle we can use to make that technical fix.
So this is, if I'm understanding correctly, an error that was made in puts and takes to the budget and was just discovered. So in order to catch both of these technical glitches, we'll move these amendments into this bill if it's the will of the committee and fix two technical problems with one bill.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out that while the amendments look like they are reducing the appropriation to the state school fund for 2002-03, but it truly is a technical fix. And if you turn to the page behind those amendments, you'll see an explanation of why this amendment is needed. And if you like, Madam Chair, I can go through the explanation.
I think that the members would benefit from understanding how the glitch took place.
Okay. First of all, you might recall from the fifth special session that part of the statewide rebalance plan included issuing $150 million of tobacco master settlement agreement bonds for K-12. And then there was a corresponding reduction in the general fund of $150 million. And this was all to balance the statewide general fund budget, but to keep the same level of funding for the state school fund. And that was in House Bill 4073. And then in the so-called sixth special session a few weeks ago, we had a couple of bills that essentially did the same thing, and that was unintended. And in Senate Bill 5548, the new statewide rebalance plan provides funding to the state school fund through appropriation bonds instead of proceeds from the tobacco master settlement agreement bonds now. What we needed to do was basically reverse what had been done in fifth special session. So in Senate Bill 5548, the general fund appropriation was increased. The other funds limitation for the Department of Education for the state school fund was decreased by $150 million, and that's shown on that first line in that table there on the explanation. At the same time, in Senate Bill 856, which basically provided for the Oregon appropriation bonds, almost all the provisions of House Bill 4073 from the fifth special session were deleted, and that included the general fund disappropriation due to the previously planned use of the TMSA bonds. And in this case, a double negative. In other words, a deletion of a disappropriation created a positive and added again $150 million general fund to the state school fund and put the statewide general fund budget out of balance. So this these amendments definitely are a technical fix to bring both the statewide budget and the state school fund budget into balance, and that's done by disappropriating $150 million from the 0203 budget, general fund budget for the state school fund.
Questions or comments? Representative March.
Well, to carry on the logic here then, if this amendment does not go through, we will automatically be $150 million off in our projected ending balance, and all of the provisional provisions of the special session 6 fix automatically would happen.
And we get $150 million for K-12.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
Question after.
Don't go there.
I don't see a problem, Madam Chair.
You may see a problem when the May revenue forecast
comes out. Oh, really?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Rose, would you like to come forward and address the committee?
For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. Just in the spirit of we got tough times ahead of us and we ought to keep a little looseness in us, Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, this is a cruel accounting.
I get you. A cruel accounting. Yes.
A new term.
That part I understand. I think.
Further questions or comments on the Dash 2 amendments? Pardon me. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2650A and open a work session on House Bill 2650A. Senator Meserle, the chair would introduce a motion to move the Dash A2 amendments into House Bill 2650.
So move.
Thank you. We have a motion on the table to move the Dash A2 amendments into House Bill 2650A. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? So ordered. Senator Meserle, the chair would entertain a motion to move House Bill 2650A as amended to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chairman, could I a point of clarification? Does this mean I'm going to be carrying the bill on the Senate side?
No.
I still move.
There is a motion on the table to move House Bill 2650A as amended with the Dash 2s to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. I will close the work session on House Bill 2650A with the addition that I will carry this in the full Ways and Means Committee. Thank you for bearing with us. We'll now open a work session on the Department of Education application for a federal National Science Foundation grant. Please come forward. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Seward. I work for the Oregon Department of Education. We're requesting authority today to apply for a National Science Foundation grant. It's a small grant of $100,000 to conduct a study of teachers of science and teachers of mathematics in the state of Oregon. The department has participated for a number of years in a Presidential Awards of Excellence project that recognizes, it's a national program that recognizes highly qualified teachers in mathematics and science. It aligns with the No Child Left Behind Act and uses the definition of highly qualified teachers in the recognition program. Oregon has had many teachers recognized. We have about 80 teachers in both of those content areas this year. The National Science Foundation has approached us, this is really an honor to the state of Oregon, approached us to accept an award of $100,000 to conduct a study of our teachers, math and science teachers, because of the nationally recognized quality of these people in their teaching careers. The study would basically survey about 200 teachers, both teachers that have been recognized under the program and teachers who have not, to identify those characteristics of teachers that are very highly qualified and their level of success and what makes these teachers be as successful as they are. The National Science Foundation would pay for the study, pay for the survey information, pay for the report, its minimum impact on our staffing in my office, but will produce a very highly useful report that we can use with teachers around the state in both mathematics and science to improve their quality of instruction, the quality of instruction for kids, and the achievement of kids. So we're asking for your support of this and approval to apply.
Questions or comments for Mr. Siebert? Question. Representative Smith.
You mentioned something about No Child Left Behind, and I didn't get it.
The No Child Left Behind Act has a component, Part 2A, actually, that requires certain levels of performance of teachers. They call it the highly qualified teachers component of the Act. It sets out a set of characteristics for teachers in terms of performing instruction with kids that produces certain results on achievement. We are working with that. We have grant funds that we give to school districts through a formula grant for those school districts to provide technical assistance and training to those teachers to meet the standards of highly qualified teachers.
And then how will this grant help you do that?
This grant provides us with information about those teachers that already meet and exceed those
standards. So you then can pass that information
on to the teachers, put it right in their hands.
Mm-hmm. I need a clarification. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions or comments? Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Linda Ames with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend approval of the request.
Ms. McGlashan.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, LFL also recommends approval of the request.
Further questions for the committee? I will open a work session on the Department of Education application for a federal National Science Foundation request. And the chair, Senator Mesley, would accept a motion to, what would the motion be?
To
grant the request grant to apply for the grant.
Recommend the full Ways and Means Committee approve the request.
Okay, so I would accept a motion to accept the grant request to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Sounds good. I move.
There's a motion on the table. Is there any objections to the motion? Motion is carried.
You're here. Have fun.
I'll carry this one also. Having no further business before this committee, are there any housekeeping issues that we need to address?
No, Madam Chair. We'll be starting the state school fund next week. Public hearings on Monday.
It's Thursday already. Okay.
Public hearings are scheduled for Wednesday evening and Thursday, so please adjust your calendars accordingly, and you should have a schedule in your offices already.
Madam Chair, if I could clarify,
yes.
We'll do public hearings starting Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, and public testimony Wednesday evening and
forgive
Thursday.
My misuse of the nomenclature.
You were notified that I won't be in Salem on Tuesday and Wednesday next week. You know about that.
Yes.
Okay, good.
And just a clarification here now. Those in our districts that want to come testify from the public will be Wednesday evening and Thursday.
That's correct.
Okay. I misinformed. I have to make a phone call.
Further comments or questions? Having no further business before the committee, this meeting's adjourned, and we'll reconvene on Monday morning at 8:30 to talk about the state school.
Susan, do you